The following is a closed circuit and not necessarily for air. With a report on the Amateur Radio Newsline current financial picture, here's our producer, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
Well, the last time I was here with a financial report, I told you that I thought we'd have enough in the bank to hopefully hold us over the summer months of June, July, and August, and that I would not be asking for contributions unless the sky was falling. Well, sadly, this year the sky is falling. This is mainly because we did not get some of the larger donations that we have come to count on to keep us going over the lean summer months when people are away on vacation. And I suspect that's probably due to the current ongoing recession. Right now, we only have a couple $100 left in our bank account. Most of that will vanish as we pay off our financial obligation in regard to presenting this year's Young Ham of the Year Award and the outstanding bills for the month of August, which are quickly piling up right here on my desk. And unlike the years through October of 2009, when I retired from full-time employment, I'm now living on a fixed income and honestly just cannot afford to underwrite the cost of bringing these newscasts to you. To be candid, I don't like to lead off a newscast with an appeal such as this, but we have no other method of getting the word out to you that we need your financial support to keep Amateur Radio Newsline on the air, and we need it right now. To all of us involved, each donation is looked upon as an ongoing vote of confidence in the quality of the news and information that we provide to you each week, and for this, I add my personal and very sincere thank you. Please remember that Amateur Radio Newsline is a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation and that your donations are tax-deductible. The easiest way to donate is by going to our website at www.arnewsline.org and clicking on the PayPal button, or you can mail a donation to the address that you'll hear at the end of this week's report. Whichever method you choose, the all-volunteer Amateur Radio Newsline team says, thank you so much for caring. We promise to do all that we can to continue bringing you the news and information you want to hear about amateur radio and personal communications in the coming days, in the coming weeks, and the coming years. Again, thank you. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, and now this week's newscast.
Thanks, Bill. Now, Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1829. With a release date of August 31st, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Amateur Radio assists in Hurricane Isaac. The London Olympics commemorative station may have set a world record. A star found devouring a planet? Find out the details here on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1829, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
Amateur radio first responders along the United States Gulf Shore were ready when Hurricane Isaac slammed ashore on August 28th and 29th. We have more in this report.
As Hurricane Isaac made its way across the Gulf of Mexico and then made landfall several miles west of New Orleans, Louisiana, members of the Hurricane Watch Net took to the airwaves to track its approach.
Whiskey Radio 4 Golf, the handle here is Bill, Bravo India Lima Lima. I'm located in Pensacola, Florida, and we've had some wind gusts here up to about 44 miles an hour. We went for a ride out along the beach this afternoon, and they do now have some roads closed, and the water was coming over the sand dunes and starting to flood some of the roads there, over.
While band conditions on 20 and 40 meters were not the greatest, the net continued and began passing storm conditions to the National Hurricane Center in Miami. One report monitored was rather interesting from a scientific point of view.
The Mississippi River at the Carrollton Gauge in New Orleans is flowing backwards.
Also taking reports for the National Hurricane Center was the VOIP Hurricane Watch Net. This group gathers information mainly from local repeaters within the storm area and also passes it along to the National Hurricane Center.
K3, November Foxtrot Uniform, Slidell, Louisiana. Estimated winds of 30 and no rain as of this time.
Hams on the VOIP net also provided ongoing damage assessment. As this report is being prepared, Hurricane Isaac has been downgraded from a Category 1 hurricane to a tropical storm, but is soaking Louisiana and surrounding states for yet another day. As such, the job of ham radio operators in coping with the storm is far from over. With thanks to K3VR for the recordings of the 20-meter hurricane watch net, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles. Jim?
We will have more on the role of amateur radio in the wake of Hurricane Isaac in upcoming Amateur Radio Newsline reports. The International Amateur Radio Union says it will back the European Broadcasting Union proposal that the top-level internet domain .radio be used to help create a global radio community. IARU President Tim Ellum, VE6SH, says his organization believes the proposal to be submitted by the European Broadcast Union could provide a unique opportunity to standardize radio domain names on the Internet. In a recently made public letter, VE6SH said he recommends that the .radio domain proposal be approved by the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. European Broadcast Union Director General Ingrid Del Tonra said the International Amateur Radio Union comments are an expression of confidence in the proposal. The complete story on the new .radio domain and how it will impact all Spectrum users is online at tinyurl.com/iaru-radio. The Radio Society of Great Britain reports that the team at 2012L, the amateur radio station for the London Olympic and Paralympic Games, believe that they have now broken the world record for the number of QSOs by a special event station. As of 2142 UTC on August 12th, 2012L had logged contact number 47,791. 2012L goes QRT September 9th at the end of the Paralympic Games closing ceremony. As such, the operators are fairly confident that they can achieve their target of 60,000 contacts. It is believed the previous standing record for a ham radio special event station was held by the group that operated DQ206X during the 2006 World Cup. That station was on the air from May 13th through July 16th of 2006 and made 47,790 contacts. More on the operation of 2012L is online at www.2012l.com. The low-orbit helium-assisted Navigator Vulture 2 space plane will carry an amateur radio automatic packet reporting system, or APRS system. The UK newspaper The Register reports that Anthony Sturck, M0UPU, who was involved in the Raspberry Pi in the Sky mission, is working on the custom control board for the Vulture 2 spaceplane. As of now, the communication subsystem has a Radiometrics 300 milliwatt HX1 144 MHz band module for APRS and a Radiometrics 10 milliwatt NTX2 433 MHz band module for RIDI. More information on frequencies will be announced at a later date. More on this upcoming near-to-space adventure can be read online at tinyurl.com/vulture-2, and that's a figure 2. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W9RCA repeater serving Indianapolis, Indiana. Legislation working its way through Congress that would add a technical expert to the staff of each FCC commissioner may not come up for a vote this fall. This is because the House and Senate versions of the bill to allow each of the five commissioners to hire one additional staff engineer are still in committee. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
Maine Republican Senator Olympia Snow introduced S-611 in May 2011. The measure seeks to amend the Communications Act of 1934 to provide commissioners additional technical expertise. However, Snow's intention to retire at the end of this year has led supporters to push for a vote before of this congressional term. The companion House measure is H.R. 2102, FCC's Commission's Technical Resource Enhancement Act. The Society of Broadcast Engineers, better known as the SBE, is a major supporter of these two pieces of legislation. In a recent press statement, SBE President Ralph Hogan said that his organization has scheduled a trip to Washington to meet with key members of Congress. This to further the group's efforts to move the bill through the House and Senate before the end of 2012. However, SBE General Counsel Chris Imlay, W3KD, acknowledged in a column that appeared in the August edition of the SBE publication The Signal that time is of the essence. According to Imlay, the SBE's last chance this fall to get H.R. 2102 through the House is on suspension. That means the measure is without the usual hearing and report procedure. To move a bill along in these cases normally requires that the bill have a large number of co-sponsors. Imlay says that in an election year, this is not easy, noting that there are only four co-sponsors of the House bill now. Currently, FCC commissioners can appoint only three legal advisors to counsel the commissioners on wired, wireless, and cable media. As part of its legislative agenda, the Society of Broadcast Engineers has sought greater technical expertise on the commission for several years. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KR7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Passage of these measures is important to the ham radio community as it will put technical expertise to the highest level of the commission, which for decades was led primarily by members of the legal profession rather than technologists and engineers. This could lead to a better understanding of our needs than is possible right now. Radio Amateurs of Canada took action after a paragliding competition in British Columbia told its contestants to communicate using a frequency in the 2-meter amateur band. Bob Holowinko, VE7WNK, has more.
Radio Amateurs of Canada received a report by a British Columbia ham who notified them of what appeared to be the use of the 2-meter band for the operation of a paragliding competition. Dave Cameron, VE7LTD, witnessed this radio traffic, and I was able to talk with Dave over the phone.
At our local repeater site, helping the locals there by doing a sweep, trying to find a source of interference, I had my HP 8920A service monitor, and I was monitoring around the band trying to find what the sources of intermod could be, and I noticed a few spikes in the ham band. Knowing that there's not a lot of VHF activity in the Pemberton area, I decided to tune into each of those, and one was on 146.415 simplex, where I heard a lot of intercommunication between both paragliders in the air and some sort of a race coordination on the ground.
This race coordination, which Dave was hearing, was the Canadian Paragliding National Championships, which was held in Pemberton, B.C. Dave reported this to the Radio Amateurs of Canada, who became extremely concerned about the organizers' assertion that all participants must use a VHF radio tuned to 146.415 MHz for launching and landing. Southern British Columbia is popular for paragliding and hand gliding thrill seekers, and the ham community here knows many of those who take part in the event are licensed hams. However, it has become apparent that many are not.
There was never a call sign used and never any identification used. Although the communication was very structured, it was definitely, you could tell it was not by ham operators.
Dave did go on to say that of the registered Canadian participants at the event, at least 40% of their names were found in the RAC database. RAC has been in contact with representatives from the paragliding community and has also requested enforcement action to be taken by government officials at Industry Canada. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bob Holowinko, VE7WNK, in Vancouver, British Columbia.
According to Radio Amateurs of Canada, protecting the ham radio spectrum from intruders is all in a day's work for the group. The online repeater directory RF Finder is inviting frequency coordinators to use the worldwide radio directory to help them in conducting their work. The hams who operate RF Finder say they may have already heard from several frequency coordinators who have told them that being able to see the repeaters across borders is very helpful. As such, RF Finder says that frequency coordinators in several countries are using RF Finder/web as a tool in their activities. They're also looking to compile a wish list from the coordination community to build a special portal for them to have the tools they need to make frequency coordination easier. If you are a coordinator who wants to contribute to this wish list, please send your thoughts by email to w2cyk@rfinder.net. And you can learn more about RF Finder and the services it provides to all who use repeaters online at www.rfinder.net. On the ham radio social scene, the ARRL has announced the organization will hold its 2014 National Centennial Convention in Hartford, Connecticut from July 17th through the 20th. The convention will mark 100 years of the ARRL's founding that took place in the city of Hartford. The theme for ARRL's centennial year is Advancing the Art and Science of Radio Since 1914. More information online at www.arrl.org/expo. According to Amateur Radio Newsline's Fred Bovey, W8HDU, the September and October issues of the National Radio Club's DX audio service will be the last to issue on cassette tape. Beginning in November, these reports will switch distribution to CDs after 27 years of tape mailouts. Fred asks that if you know someone who is blind or otherwise visually impaired and who loves the topic of broadcast radio, please tell them about the DX audio service. More information can be found online at www.nrcdxas.org. A world-famous entertainer may be the next to travel to the International Space Station. Amateur Radio Newsline's George Bowen, W2XBS, has the details.
British soprano Sarah Brightman could become the next space tourist to visit the International Space Station. This, according to a senior official at the Russian Space Agency, who hinted on August 22nd that the 52-year-old songstress, best known for creating the role of Christine Daae in the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical The Phantom of the Opera, is being considered as candidate for such a trip. The Interfax News Agency cited a space agency source as saying that the name of the next space tourist, who will most likely fly to the ISS in 2015, will be officially announced in around a month. The source also told Interfax that Brightman visited Russia around a month ago and was given the go-ahead by the medical commission to train at the Yuri Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center in Star City outside of Moscow. Previous space tourists visiting the ISS have included the Canadian founder of the Cirque du Soleil, Guy Lamberté, and computer game creator Richard Garriott, W5KWQ. As most of you know, Richard Garriott is the son of retired astronaut Owen Garriott, W5LFL, who was the first radio amateur to ever operate from space, this on shuttle mission STS-9. Iranian-American entrepreneur Anousheh Ansari is so far the only woman to make the trip to the ISS. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm George Bowen, W2XBS, reporting from our Northeast News Bureau in Albany, New York.
More about Sarah Brightman's proposed trip to Earth orbit is online at tinyurl.com/Brightman-ISS. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The man responsible for many pieces of equipment in the shacks of so many hams has become a silent key at age 91. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Carlson, KQ6 FM, brings us the story of Everett Gracie, WA6 CBA.
On Sunday morning, August 26th, the amateur radio world lost a gentle giant as Everett Gracie, WA6 CBA, became a silent key peacefully in his sleep. He'd been a licensed amateur for over 70 years, and for the many of us who knew Everett personally, it's a loss unlike any other. We've lost a great source of knowledge, but most of all, a dear friend. For everyone else who did not know him, the word giant is not adequate to describe him. His contributions to the amateur radio world were immeasurable. For those of you who ever owned a piece of gear with the name RF Concepts or Mirage Communications on it, you held a piece of his life and legacy. He was a co-founder of both companies, which he started with Ken Holliday, K6HCP. Later in life, Everett became a consultant to LDG Electronics, who, according to Everett, put out one of the greatest automatic antenna tuners on the market and have been sold worldwide. He also helped bring new lines of radios to America, such as Olinco. When it came to ham conventions, he always came through with equipment donations from his many contacts acquired over the years of starting companies. Everett spent most of his life in and around the Reno, Nevada area, where he married his wife, Dorothy, the love of his life, July 6, 1940. He was devoted to her since he always put her first and foremost in his mind. He took care of her in their later years, and finally it was his concern for her well-being that prompted his move from Reno to Grass Valley, California, so that her care could be shared with medical professionals. Edward was also a decorated veteran who fought in the Army in Europe during World War II. He was awarded the Bronze Star and Silver Star for bravery in Germany. He was also the recipient of the Purple Heart and author of several books. From a 13-year-old hobo to an entrepreneur, My 20 Years of RV Adventures, and Buying and Selling Real Estate, My Owner. One of my personal most treasured possessions is an autographed copy of his autobiographical book, From Freight Trains to Airplanes, published in 1999. Everett was always ready to lend a friendly hand with a good piece of advice, elmering and plenty of wisdom, which helped many a ham in need, and always seemed to have exactly what they needed to complete that project or get back on the air. He even gave away parts for fixing antennas and gear at no charge. As a dear mutual friend of Everett's and mine said of his passing, "Everett, I'll miss you, you rascal. Oh, and while you're winging your way around the heavens, you'd better not tamper with my RF signal when I'm attempting to work DX, or someday you and I will have a long discussion about that." This is a man whom we can all pattern our lives after. With sincere thanks to Joe Wolf, WA6RKN, for his informative help, for the Amateur Radio Newsline, this is Don Carlson, KQ6FM, in Reno.
Per his request, no service or memorial will be held. Instead, his ashes will be placed next to his wife, Dorothy. Everett and Dorothy Gracie had been married 70 years. SpaceTravel.com reports on August 22nd that a European ATV-3 unmanned supply spacecraft was used to raise the International Space Station's orbit to about 261 miles. The orbit adjustment was done in two stages, with the ATV-3 engines firing for 348 seconds to lift the orbit to 257 miles, followed by another burn 4 hours later that brought the space station to its final altitude. For amateur radio space enthusiasts, this means you'll have to readjust your Keplerian elements when tracking the ISS at its new higher altitude. The complete story of this orbital maneuver is online at tinyurl.com/ISS-reboost. AMSAT says the registration for its 2012 Space Symposium is now open online. To register over the World Wide Web, simply take your computer to store.amsat.org/catalog and click on the AMSAT 2012 Symposium item in the top left box. A mail-in option is also available for those who want to register the old-fashioned way. A downloadable paper registration form in MS Word and PDF format available on the 2012 Symposium page at tinyurl.com/AMSAT-2012-REG. This year's AMSAT Space Symposium takes place October 26th through the 28th at the Holiday Inn Orlando International Airport in Orlando, Florida. The hotel is located only 1 mile north of the Orlando International Airport at 5750 T.G. Lee Boulevard in Orlando. A CubeSat designed and built by students at the Cape Peninsular University of Technology in Belleville, South Africa, will be launched towards the end of November. Still known by its engineering name, ZA-Cube-1, the satellite will be shipped in the next few weeks to Holland. There it will be integrated with two other CubeSats in the launch carrier before being shipped for integrating with the rocket. ZA-Cube-1 is rare for a ham radio bird in that it carries a high-frequency transmitter operating on 14.099 MHz in the 20-meter band. Also on board is a small camera and a telemetry transmitter. NDX, N6MW, and possibly one or two other operators will be active stroke KH-8 from American Samoa between November 8th and the 19th. Operations on 160 through 10 meters using mainly CW but some SSV and RIDI. QSL via Logbook of the World. Bill Moore, NC1L at the ARRL, says that the 1998 XU-1A operation from Cambodia has been approved for DXCC credit. Moore says that if you have had QSLs rejected, please send an email to bmoore@arrl.org to be placed on the list for updates. If you remember the submission in which you included the QSL, please note this to expedite the search for the rejected QSO. Lastly, SM0JHF reports he has retired and can no longer afford sending out QSL cards automatically. He notes that for the past 50 years, he has personally filled out and shipped more than 100,000 QSL cards for his activities using numerous past call signs. He says he will clean house and dispose of blank cards by the end of this year. If you need a card for any of his calls, please contact him by email to sm0jhf@gmail.com. A complete list of his operations over the years is under sm0jhf on qrz.com. And finally this week, radio and radio astronomy have brought some new light on the way nature works out in the cosmos. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, takes us to the far reaches of space.
Astronomers have found evidence of a planet being devoured by its star, yielding insights into the fate that will befall Earth several billion years in the future. The team uncovered the signature of the planet that had been absorbed by looking at the chemistry of the host star. They also think a surviving planet circling the star may have been kicked into its unusual orbit by the destruction of a neighboring world. The U.S., Polish, Spanish team made this discovery when they were studying the star BD+48740-, which is one of a stellar class known as red giants. Rising temperatures near the cores of red giants cause these elderly stars to expand in size. This in turn results in any nearby planets to be absorbed by the expanding star or otherwise destroyed. It's the way of the universe, now brought to us thanks to the art of radio and the science of astronomy. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK in Zion, Illinois.
Details of the work have been published in Astrophysical Journal Letters. The complete story is online at tinyurl.com/planet-hungry-star. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron in a TMW, wishing you a safe and enjoyable Labor Day weekend. 73, and as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012, all rights reserved.